Father of Storms. Written by Dean Jones. Produced by Be Here. Episode 5.
Be Here. Bringing books to life. Vision. Without sight.
Chapter 10. One Fateful Day. The day started brightly. Hope had a sense of purpose and belief that they could find her father and get out to London. They sat happily in the hotel restaurant, discussing their plans for the day ahead. Hope took a sip of her orange juice while watching a couple on the table a few rows away arguing about their previous night. She found it difficult not to smile at the woman, who must have been all of 5 foot tall, even with her silky black hair tied in a bun on top of her head. She wagged her index finger directly into the man's face, letting him know his drunken behaviour was not going to be tolerated.
"I won't have another holiday like the one in Blackpool last year. Do you understand me, Nathan? You promised me you wouldn't drink this time, but last night..."
she said in a loud whisper.
"You let me down."
Nathan was nodding along whilst stuffing a fork full of bacon and sausage into his mouth. His bulky frame was hunched over his plate and he seemed to be trying to appear regretful. It wasn't the argument that amused Hope, it was the size difference between them. This tiny woman had a huge man cowing at her every word like a small toddler. The room had quite a few of the guests dotted around the spacious dining area. The tables looked pristine with their brilliant white cloths and sparkling cutlery. It was enough to make you think this was a much higher brow hotel than the price suggests. There were two waitresses milling between the tables, asking if anyone wanted their drinks topping up. Through the window, Hope could see the street with the occasional person passing by on their way to wherever they were going. There was a crash from behind. Hope spun her head to find the younger of the two waitresses holding her head with a pile of plates at her feet. The second server rushed over from the other side of the room and immediately started picking up the broken dishes. Her voice carried so Hope could hear her angry tones as she placed plates into a plastic bucket she had pulled from behind the pedestal at the entrance of the restaurant. Hope didn't understand what she was saying, as it was in another language, possibly Polish if she had to guess, but the meaning was clear.
"Poor girl,"
Marcy said as she finished the last of her toast.
"What?"
Hope glanced back at her mother.
"Oh, yeah, I think the other one is overreacting. Accidents happen."
There was a nod of agreement as she watched her mother place her fork neatly onto a plate next to the knife she had been using.
"Okay, if you finish gawping at the people having their breakfast, I suppose we can head back to the square. I expect there'll be some activity, so we'll have to be careful,"
Marcy warned.
"I am sure whoever took your dad will be looking for us. We will need to be careful."
Hope responded with a mouthful of egg. She placed her own cutlery down on her plate before wiping her mouth with the napkin.
"I wish you had put your knife and fork properly onto your plate, love,"
Marcy said as she straightened the cutlery.
"It's good manners, especially in hotels."
Hope shrugged. She didn't understand what having a knife and fork perfectly aligned on a plate had to do with etiquette. She smiled before placing a napkin neatly over the plate before getting up from the table. She followed her mum out of the room as they made their way to the front doors. 20 minutes later, they arrived back at the same pillar they had hid behind the day before. Hope was shocked to find an uncomfortable normality in the air as people milled around the streets going about their daily business. Marcy and Hope peeked into the road from the corner as the noise of London carried on without pause or recognition of the events they had witnessed. Hope felt her stomach twist when she watched a couple laugh as they passed them.
"Where are the police cordons, Mum?"
Hope asked as they made their way into the street.
I have no idea. There's not even any signs of the scorch mark I distinctly remember being here.
Marcy pointed at the ground, where now fresh paving slabs sat, blended in with the rest of the street.
What's going on? This doesn't make any sense.
Hope scanned the faces around them. None paid her any attention as they moved about their day. Ahead of them, several stands had arrived, producing the scents of spiced food and hot coffee.
It's like nothing happened,
she said. Hope glanced at her mother, who had a bemused look of concern on her face.
I don't know, sweetheart. It's clear something more is happening than we first thought.
Hope felt her mother's hand touching her own and clasped her fingers around it. The day had started with optimism, but now this had given her a queasy stomach.
The people who did this are not like the nutters who've been chasing us across the country. This is considerably more organised.
Marcy continued.
Those suited men seem to be in charge. The police all had their backs turned. It seems their job was keeping the crowds away. The others were picking through the bodies looking for your dad.
Hope followed her mother's eyes as they scanned the square. Her memories of the previous day were blurred, but she could remember the smell of burning. The memory increased her stomach's desire to empty out her breakfast.
Can you feel anything? Any traces of your dad that we could follow?
Marcy asked. Hope opened herself to the energy around them. At once, a thousand signatures flooded into her consciousness, causing her to shut down quickly.
There are so many people.
Focus, Hope. Remember what your dad has taught you. Find a way to filter them out by only focusing on the one energy you're looking for. One you know so well it should be easy to find.
Her mum didn't sound particularly convinced at her words, but Hope knew what she meant. She knew her mum had listened to several lessons her dad had given her over the years, so perhaps she knew a little more than she believed. Hope remembered the only thing her father repeated over and over again was that once you were able to control the focus, you could achieve great things with Spey. Hope took another breath, finding her center after a moment's pause. Again, all the energies of those moving around her flooded her mind, but this time she focused on only her father. She breathed as she remembered his voice, the smell of his aftershave and the feel of his presence when they were close. Slowly, her mind began to clear as the people around her became only background signatures in her head.
I can sense him,
she whispered as she turned around to face where the energy was coming from.
Over there,
she pointed.
That's where they put him, into a van,
she confirmed.
Excellent. Can you see which direction they went?
Hope moved towards the place where the pool of her dad's energy mingled with the other energies around them. Standing inside the collected source, she received a greater connection. Ahead, she spotted a trail, like a shimmering ribbon, moving away from them back towards Oxford Street.
This way,
she said as she ran towards the corner. They reached the busy street filled with shoppers and sightseers. Hope slowed to a walk as she searched the street.
He's heading towards Marble Arch. We have to follow it.
Again, they broke into a run. There had been so much running over the years, ever since the first stories appeared in the newspapers about those three boys. Marcy would never have believed that an unexpected event in her life would determine how she lived for so many years later. Yesterday's events reminded her of when she had first discovered her husband's gifts. Marcy had been with Seth for over 3 years. They were planning a trip to the cinema when she suggested they head off for a day's trip, as she knew somewhere special he would like to visit. They packed his car before setting off for Hayter Rocks in Dartmoor. She was excited to show him the stunning views from the summit and enjoyed a romantic picnic. When they arrived, they parked their car by the visitor's centre. It was a quiet day, so finding a parking space was less hassle than she had expected it would be. Stepping out of the car onto the crunching gravel, she took in a deep breath of fresh air as she let the warm breeze blow her hair. She tilted her head back, gazing up into the cloudless blue of the sky.
This was a wonderful idea,
she said as they passed the visitor's centre door.
Do you want to go in or head straight up?
She asked.
No sense waiting around for more people to turn up. Let's get our walking legs moving,
Seth replied. There were sounds of other day trippers getting their things from the cars as they strolled across, then set out on the short walk up the hill towards the collection of magnificent granite monoliths. As they strolled, she regaled him with the history of how these steps had been carved into the tor by the Victorians to make the summit more accessible for visitors. She glanced to her side to see Seth watching her intently with a smile on his face.
What is it? Am I boring you?
She asked.
I'm sorry, but I get so excited when I come to these ancient places, I tend to ramble on.
Seth shook his head.
No, I was enjoying listening. It is truly a wondrous place. I can remember coming here many years ago with a friend.
He paused, looking thoughtful.
But it has changed significantly since then.
He drifted off.
Significantly?
She asked.
How old are you?
She gave him a nudge with her elbow, laughing at what was clearly a joke. They reached the top of the rocks after using the steps. The view across Dartmoor was magnificent. Marcy pointed out towards the coast and then the River Tain, which snaked through the heartland of the moor. The wind grew stronger as they stood, soaking in the views. Seth grabbed her hand to steady her after a gust caught her by surprise.
Looks like you just saved my life. I will have to stay with you so I can repay the favour one day.
She laughed. Behind them, several people started their ascent of the rocks, including three young boys who laughed at an older couple ahead of them. As they passed, the smell of alcohol drifted on the air. She kept her eyes down, not wanting to engage with them, as they were clearly out to cause trouble, in her opinion. This was going to be a pleasant day without any issues. They reached the bottom and heard the sounds of the boys shouting obscenities at people making their way up from the visitor's centre. Marcy shook her head.
Some people seem hell-bent on ruining other people's days.
Let's sit away from the rock so we can talk a little without being disturbed or overlooked,
Seth suggested as he pointed away from the gathered crowd.
I know a place, but it's a bit of a hike,
he said. A tinge of excitement filled her at the thought of this private picnic they were going to enjoy. She watched as Seth strode ahead of her with a basket held lightly in his grip as he navigated down the hill to find a more secluded location. She liked to watch him from behind and loved the confidence of his stride. His blonde hair flowed in the breeze as he strode ahead. She couldn't help but imagine his strong arms around her whilst she rubbed his muscular shoulders. The idea of a secluded picnic was starting to make her feel a little more excited as she followed down the hill. After 20 minutes of walking, she picked her way down the hillside to catch up with Seth as he crouched under a tree beside an old wall. The barrier provided shelter from the wind whipping across the moor. They placed the blanket down to unload the food before Seth popped the cork on a bottle of wine he had smuggled into the basket.
I can't have many glasses of this,
she said.
I am driving back, remember? Unless you have other plans?
There was a hint of an invitation in her voice. She felt herself becoming aroused at the possibilities.
Maybe I do,
he said cryptically, before patting his hand on the ground next to him in an invitation for her to sit.
Been wanting to talk with you for a while, Marcy. So much I need you to know. I do not want you to be concerned about what I'm about to say, but you should remember that I love you very much.
Marcy felt there was about to be one of those I have a wife and children conversations she had heard before. She settled herself, crossing her arms, waiting for what she felt was inevitable. After all, she'd had no luck with men. Why would this one be any different?
I see you are already defensive. There is no need.
He smiled slightly, but she kept her arms folded with her eyes firmly on him.
I need you to be open-minded. Can you do that for me?
He asked.
Hmm.
She grunted. She was now sure that her idyllic plans of settling with this man were about to be blown out of the water.
You see the rocks?
He pointed back up the hill. She nodded without looking.
I came here before they had added the steps and before the road. In fact, it was long before anyone thought of these as anything other than rocks. Although I do recall a story. One of the farmers told me about a giant who placed it here. But I didn't really believe him.
She blinked slightly, confused with how this was beginning.
You see, I was born. How do I say this?
He scratched his head before sucking in a gulp of air.
I am over 1,000 years old, Marcy. I was born under the rule of King Athelbald, the first in a village called Fethernley, Fadderley as it's now known.
He stopped talking, clearly waiting for her to respond, but she was still waiting for the punchline. She maintained what she thought was a blank expression, as inside her mind was racing with possible reactions to the bad news she was certain he was about to share. Marcy nodded for him to continue.
I was married to a woman named Meredith who I loved with all my heart and soul, but she was taken from me.
Marcy noticed a tinge of pain in his eyes. She sat forward slightly, in readiness for the next part of his revelation.
Well,
Seth continued,
I was told she would be reborn, only I would have to wait.
He reached out a hand towards her, but she didn't take it.
I've waited for a very long time. For you. I knew that I would feel her energy return, which is how I know I love you so truly. Because you are her. Well, you have the same soul, more specifically.
She certainly hadn't heard that one before. By the look on his face, she could tell he regretted what had left his lips. Marcy remained silent as she watched him curiously.
What are you thinking, my love?
He asked. Marcy eyed him warily. Her mind was filled with questions, but she kept them to herself. She just stared at the man she loved, searching for something to cling to amongst all this madness he was saying. There, within the heart of everything that seemed so crazy, was the one thing she knew to be true. He loved her as much as she loved him. She had from the minute he walked into the travel agents over 3 years ago. It had been like putting on a warm coat in the winter, feeling the soft security it gave whenever he held her. Marcy decided that whatever was about to be said, she would go with it. After all, she trusted him, and if he believed he was 1,000 years old, then fine, she would deal with that at a later date.
So you are old then?
She smiled.
Well, yes.
Seth laughed.
I was born around 732, I reckon. They didn't keep track of the years, but then everything was measured in seasons.
He grinned, shrugging his shoulders slightly.
So that would make me...
Marcy watched as he did the mental arithmetic.
1,282 years old.
He widened his eyes at the sound of the number.
No wonder Minnie's hurt.
He smiled. Marcy giggled at the joke.
I have always had a thing for older men.
She quipped.
Anything else you want to tell me? Like, I don't know, how about why you don't look 1,200 years old?
A good question, and the answer will require you to open your mind further.
He looked in her eyes. Clearly, he was trying to think of the best way to explain it.
With Meredith, my wife, this has been a much simpler conversation.
He said.
Spey was known then. People who still followed the old gods believed in its magic and wisdom of those who worked it.
He shrugged.
But those days are long gone. Now it's all TV and aeroplanes.
Marcy glanced back towards the grey monoliths that sat atop the hill. Their cold sides soaked up the sun without ever letting its warmth linger. How could she possibly believe what she was being told? The rocks were ingrained in the history of the area, and here was her boyfriend telling her he remembered them before they had built steps up to the crest. She waited as Seth took a few deep breaths, clearly collecting his thoughts. She watched as he rolled his eyes around as if the words he needed were circling his head.
Where to begin?
He said.
Well, there's energy all around us, in the air, the grass, and in this bottle.
He lifted the wine bottle.
Though the energy in this is dormant as it had been manufactured, but if you were to melt it down again, it could be released.
He rambled.
Anyway, energy is everywhere, and time is an energy of sorts. I can manipulate energy, so I've kept time from affecting me until now.
Interesting,
she said as she got to her feet.
And this is all very nice, but I think it's probably time we went back.
Marcy was struggling with the tales he told her. She loved him, that was true, but she didn't understand why he was saying these things. She suddenly felt the need to be at home, away from him, so she could try to get her head around it. Looking back as she searched the London streets for signs of her husband, she could see the fear she had developed when he told her his truth. The idea that the man she loved so deeply could be some kind of crazy person was something she simply wasn't prepared to accept. He would later show her exactly what the gifts he had could do. As they reached Marble Arch, Hope took a moment to catch her breath as she scanned the area looking for the trail to follow.
It looks like they went into the park,
she said.
Then that's where we go next,
Marcy called as she passed into Hyde Park with Hope following behind her. Chapter 11. Good morning, Seth. Seth awoke with the sun filling the small room, the heat of summer warming the air around him. His brown curtain swayed as the air moved, bringing with it the sound of his mother humming to herself as she swept the floor around his bed. Seth turned onto his side to look down to where he left his clothes the night before. It was no surprise that they now lay neatly folded, opposed to the heap he knew he had left them in before getting into bed. Rolling back, he reached over his head to grab the wooden frame. He pulled as he stretched, causing the bed to creak with the strain. He liked sleeping, and his bed was one of his favourite places. His wolf fur blanket with its soft mottled grey strands soothed him as he stroked it. The feather mattress he had stuffed himself, providing support for his body against the wooden slats of his bed.
Good morning, Seth,
his mother said as she sat down on the edge of his bed. He watched her sleepily whilst contemplating getting up to start the day. He gazed sluggishly at his mother, now in her 40th summer, her greying hair plaited neatly as ever down her back. The kindness he loved so dearly was written all over her face, as was her love for him.
Your father is waiting for you in the fields. He was going to wake you an hour ago, but I convinced him to let you sleep.
She ran her hand across his hair down to his cheek. Seth felt as warm as the room did from the sunshine spilling in through the windows.
Come now, up you get. I'll make you some breakfast before you start your chores.
She ruffled his hair, got up and moved towards the ladder. Moments later, the sound of food being prepared filled the house, with it the aroma of baking bread reaching his nostrils. Seth felt the pang of hunger in his stomach, letting him know it was time to get up. Getting out of his bed, he stretched his arms over his head, letting out a long, contented sigh. Seth grabbed his pants and shirt from next to his bed and quickly pulled them on before he made his way to the wash bowl to clean himself up. He could still hear his mother humming to herself and found her laying the long table in the centre of the room with cold meat and fresh bread for his breakfast. He took a step forward, ducking his head under the beam that spanned the room. The house wasn't the biggest in the village, even though his father was the chief. It was, though, in the best location atop the hill, overlooking the rest of the houses. Although modest compared to one or two others, it had enough space for them all, with each having separate areas for their own things. The living area also contained the kitchen, with the stone chimney filling the wall. From his right, he could see the daylight spilling in from the front door. Well, the only door, adding additional light to what is usually a dark room. He had seen the longhouses of other chief villagers, but found that the house he shared with his parents was filled with much more love than their ostentatious buildings. Above the fire, a pot of something tasty was hanging, cooking something he knew he would be enjoying later that day. The aroma filled the kitchen. His stomach grumbled at the smell and anticipation of being filled. Seth ate while his mother watched, a smile never leaving her lips.
Mother, do you have to watch me eat?
Seth snapped. There was a chuckle as the smile broadened.
Oh, my darling Seth. I have watched you eat every morning since the first day you entered this world, and I intend to watch you a little while longer.
She turned her head slightly, then stared hard at Seth, who knew he wouldn't win an argument over the subject, so returned to tearing his bread and filling his mouth with the cold ham.
Ah, Seth, it only seems but a few mornings ago when I held you close and watched you contently drink your first meal.
There was a pause as she let the words hang in the air. Seth knew she would be embarrassing him with whatever she said next, so he lowered his head as he tried to concentrate more on his food than whatever his mother was saying.
Your little nose wrinkled up as you hungrily took my milk for the first time. You were an eager feeder too. I remember May telling me you would grow to be big and strong like your father. She wasn't wrong.
She let out a little sigh.
Each morning you seem bigger than the morning before. 18 summers I've watched, and you grow faster than I can keep up with. You were wearing your father's old furs 2 winters ago, and you'll soon be too big for the ones you wore last.
She reached across the table, placing her hand on Seth's chin, then slowly raised his head so she could look into his eyes.
I do not know where the time has gone, but it seems I blinked, and the babe I held became a man.
She held his eyes for a moment, and he was happy to let her, although he could sense there was something else on his mother's mind this morning.
May tells me a man needs a wife,
she said, not taking her gaze away. Panic filled Seth. He coughed as a piece of bread lodged itself in his throat. His mother giggled at the reaction.
I felt the same way when May told us of her plans, but I now realize she was right. You are a grown man, and the time is right for you to begin a new life outside of our home. You have so much potential, my son. You are a thoughtful, strong man, filled with love and passion enough to melt even the coldest of winters. She will be a very lucky girl to get you as a husband.
Seth studied his mother.
You have chosen someone already?
His mother nodded.
May and your father spoke for a long time about the subject. She has since visited the girl and her parents. She tells me you will not be disappointed, Seth.
She got to her feet, retrieved her broom, then began humming around the house while she swept. Seth stared at the chair where his mother had just informed him he was going to get married. He swallowed the meat and bread still in his mouth with a gulp of milk to wash it down. He knew his life had just changed, and that the ideas of travel and adventure he had planned for the whole summer had just been taken away. Chapter 12. No Longer Useful. Ardith stood waiting in the usual place for him to arrive. The trees towered overhead, blocking most of the sun's light. In the winter months, the sky was clearly visible, adding a feeling of exposure, but today the leaves filled the branches. Over time, her impatience at being forced to wait had diminished as her fear and reverence for her master had grown. She idly watched the bees visiting the woodland flowers, losing herself in the movement of the insects as they busied themselves, flitting from flower to flower, dodging the ferns and low branches of the woodland floor. A hand fell on her shoulder, pulling her from her daydream. She turned to find the hunched, hooded figure she recognized as her master.
I grow weary of your failure, child. We have met many times, each ending with the promise of action that will allow me to get what I want from that witch.
He spat the words with venom. He was clearly irritated, which was something Ardith had not witnessed before.
I've followed all your instructions, Master, but Seth always seems to get in the way. He learns quickly, adapting to any scenario as fast as they can be created, especially since his meeting with the Mara 2 summers ago.
She felt the air around her starting to thin as the sound of buzzing filled her ears. Her chest heaved, trying to suck oxygen into her lungs as her mind filled with images of her broken body lying at May's feet. She recoiled with disgust and panic at this vivid memory, yet she struggled with the logic. How could she remember something like that?
I have decided, child. You are not strong enough to get me what I desire. Even your pathetic need to become an all-powerful spey worker is not enough motivation for you to take the risks I need to get me what I want.
Ardith looked down at her feet under the weight of the criticism from her master.
I need to find another way, clearly, and cannot be bothered wasting any more of my time or energy on you.
The man turned on his heel and started to walk away. In panic, Ardith rushed after him.
Please, Master, I can do this. All I need is more time. Perhaps you could teach me some new skills to accomplish this?
The man stopped moving. He seemed to regard her for a moment from beneath his hood before continuing towards the wood's edge.
I agree, the boy has indeed grown powerful over these years,
he said. Ardith nodded as she kept pace with him.
I have clearly not given him the attention he deserves. Perhaps this is who I need to be speaking with to get what I want from May.
He coughed out her name like it was something unpleasant he was regurgitating. Ardith stopped, dead. Inside, her guts twisted at the comment. She held her breath, trying to regain composure.
But Master, he's barely a man with half the training I've received. What power could he have which is greater than my own?
Question hung unanswered in the air as he continued to move away from her. Ardith composed herself before running after her master. She hoped to convince him that even though she had failed him in the past, she could still be of use.
Master, perhaps I could kill the boy for you. Then she would only have me to rely on. I could then manipulate the hag so you can take advantage.
It was a long shot. Seth was huge. She had no idea how she would even attempt to kill him, never mind succeed. She was still considering this when she collided with the now stationary figure in front of her. She took a quick step backwards as he turned to look at her.
And how exactly would you kill the boy, child?
He asked. Ardith considered this a moment, but could think of nothing she could do to follow through with this suggestion. The lack of response seemed enough for him as he again headed out of the forest. Ardith didn't move from the prostrated position she had adopted. She felt entirely disconsolate as she watched the man she believed would bring her what she desired disappear out of sight. She knew she would not find him again. He was gone. A tear made its way down her cheek as she thought about the loss of this man she had come to depend upon. As she wiped her face on the robe, the ire at the one she believed had made this happen grew inside her.
I will kill them both,
she brooded.
I could poison the boy, then drive a knife between the hag's shoulders as she realizes it was me who did it. Then her power will be mine. Once this is done, I will find this man, then kill him too.
Getting to her feet, she brushed off her clothes before striding towards her house, knowing that tomorrow, whilst the oaf was full of excitement to be getting married and his stag hunt, she could catch him off guard. Then she would be the powerful one. He would be dead.